Hello, this is Roman Gabriel, and you are listening to The Grilling Truth.
Welcome to The Grilling Truth's NFL Legend Show, brought to you by Gridiron Mo, an interactive football app where you get to call what you think the offense or defense should do during a live NFL game and see what all other fans have called also. Check out Gridiron Mo at www.gridironmo.com. As always, for The Legend Show, I'm your host, Mike Goodpaster. And today's guest played in the NFL, I believe, about 8 years for the Packers, Broncos, Browns, Chargers, that he played in the WFL also. Help me welcome to the show, quarterback Don Horn.
Thank you, Mike. Glad to be here.
Oh, great to have you on. We'll just start from the beginning. When did you first start playing football?
Oh, gosh. I mean, I started playing football as a kid. I grew up in L.A., Southern California, and God, I wish I had a excuse me, my allergies are bothering me. Wish I had a dollar for every time somebody told me, "Yeah, you're too fat, you're too slow, you never make it," and stuff like that, or whatever. But I was about 11 years old, and I decided my goal in life, I wanted to play. I'd like to take a shot at playing professional football, and work my tail off, and finally achieve the goal. So.
All right, so then you go on to high school. You want to tell us a little bit about your high school career, maybe some early influences you had?
Yeah, well, of course, yeah, everybody remembers and loves their, you know, their high school coach. He's a, you know, he was a great inspiration for me. And then, I played in L.A. It was pretty competitive, league. And actually grew up with a kid named Doc Ellis, who pitched for years in the major leagues.
Okay.
And I used to catch Doc or whatever. I always told Doc he should have been a wide receiver, but he, you know, he signed with the Pittsburgh Pirates right out of high school. So, and then I went on to Washington State, played up there for for about a year and a half, played spring ball up there, and they fired the head coach, brought a new coach in. He wanted me to be a third pulling guard, take the snap, pitch it to the tailback, and then, you know, along with the two guards, you know, lead the sweep.
Yeah.
And an old running back named Keith Lincoln was up there, and he was up there, you know, watching spring ball 1 year, and he says, "Don," he says, "you got some talent, you got some potential, you got to get out of here and go down there where they throw the ball." And that's the first time I heard Coach Don Coryell's name. So anyway, ended up transferring to San Diego State, played with the great Bear Coryell, Don Coryell. Never had so much fun in my life.
You want to talk a little bit about Coach Coryell, and also on that staff, I think you had Joe Gibbs, who I read was your roommate.
Right, yeah, Joe and I, and another guy named Gary Garrison, and a guy named Jeff Staggs, who played for a few years too with the Chargers. We were four of us, had a two-bedroom apartment. And after about 2 months, Coach John Madden was the DNC coordinator. He insisted that Joe move out because Joe was no longer a player. He was a graduate assistant coach, and he didn't want players and coaches living together. So Joe eventually moved out, and there were three of us. And I got the bedroom by myself, which was nice.
Yeah, and I think we had Fred Dreyer on the other day who talked about San Diego State a little bit. And, I mean, it's just amazing. Did a school, I mean, it wasn't Division I-A. I think it was considered, what, 1AA? But with the coaching staff they had, I think Ernie Zampezi was also on the staff. And the fact that when I read, I think Coach Coryell was there like 7 or 8 years and lost a total of like 5 games the entire time he was there.
Yeah.
What was your relationship like with Coach Coryell?
Oh, he was like a father. You know, he was like a big brother and a father to me. I mean, the whole staff was fantastic. I never had so much fun in my life playing football for Coach Coryell. Just an amazing man. In fact, years ago, you remember back around the year 2000, you know, the greatest show on turf?
Yeah.
With the St. Louis Rams and Kurt Warner, and, you know, the three-step drop, five-step drop, boom, 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 you know, hitting the ball, real quick type of a game plan, hit the receivers going upfield, et cetera, et cetera. I'm watching them play, you know, over the course of a year or two, and I always, you know, I live here in Colorado, and I was telling a lot of my old Bronco teammates, I said, "Wait a minute." I said, "That's the same offense that we ran at San Diego State." And, of course, most of the old, you know, players go, yeah, you're just saying that, blah, blah, blah. And then a year or two later, there was a big article in the Sunday sports section, Mike Martz, et cetera, and they were asking him, basically, they said, "Where'd you get your ideas for that wide open, quick, quick offense, the greatest show on turf, and that type of thing. And he says, I got it sitting in an Aztec Bowl at San Diego State back in the mid-60s watching Don Coryell's, you know, great football team. So I'm going, there it is. There's the proof right there. You know, that's the same offense we ran at Coryell ran, you know, 30, 40 years ago.
Yeah, and I think at the same time, one of your main wide receivers was Haven Moses, who ended up having a great career with the Broncos.
Yeah, Haven's right here. In fact, I just talked to Haven the other day, and his wife, Joyce, was one of our cheerleaders at San Diego State.
Haven's all right, now, I sent Haven a message to be on the show, and he keeps ignoring me, so you got to hook that up.
I'll see what I could do. I'll see what I could do. I might see him Thursday night. We have a big function out here. They're honoring. We have a little thing out here. They're doing something, and they're honoring Wade Phillips, who's an old friend. You know, the great defensive coordinator for the Broncos here. A lot of the old Denver Broncos will be there honoring him, and I hope Coach. Haven will be there along with some of the other coaches. You know, for the Denver Broncos and the company I'm representing right now, Premier Stem Cell Institute, is one of the sponsors for it. So. Got to give them a plug, too.
Oh, well, plug away. You got a website for them or anything?
Yeah, it's www.premierstemcellinstitute.com.
All right. We get to the end of the show. I'm asking what you do today. You can repeat that and tell everybody a little
perfect.
Bit more about it.
Yeah, that'd be great. Yeah.
So we'll go to after your college career. You get drafted by the defending world champion Green Bay Packers in the first round. You want to tell us a little bit about your draft day and Coach Lombardi that called you?
It's funny, Mike. It's totally different now than what it was, you know, back then. I was sitting in the PR department, a little 10x10 room at San Diego State, and I had talked to quite a few scouts and coaches from some of the teams around the league, and they all told me they were going to, if I was available, they were going to pick me in the first round. And I'm sitting there listening to the radio. I mean, you know, it's going on the radio. And we're listening, and all these teams that said they were going to pick me chose someone else. And I'm going, you know, suddenly you realize, you know, maybe their word is not what they, you know, you start having doubts. And anyway, right towards the end of the first round, the phone rings. And the lady says, is this Don Horn? I said, yes, it is. She said, this is Carol so-and-so. Please hold for Coach Vince Lombardi. And I thought somebody was jerking my chain, right, Mike. I mean, and all of a sudden you hear this rough voice come on, you know, Don, and he says, I believe Kansas City. He says, Kansas City's picking right now. And he says, we're considering making you our number one draft choice, when we pick here in a few minutes. And then he asked me a couple questions and whatever. And then, you know, I mean, it sounded like him. I figured out somebody's really jerking my chain. 20 minutes later, the phone rang back, and he says, Don, he says, this is Coach Vince Lombardi. You know, you're now Green Bay Packer, you know, that kind of thing. When can you get back here? You know, I just went through the ceiling. Never talked to Green Bay. You know, I guess back then they had a consortium of scouts, et cetera.
Yeah, it was the Bledsoe service, wasn't it?
Yeah, the Bledsoe service was one of them, yeah. And they would trade information and stuff. And so, anyway, that's how I ended up going to Green Bay. A lot of people in the circles over the years, they say as far as my professional career went, because I wasn't fast to fleet, but I had quick feet and quick delivery, and I loved to throw the ball and wide open type of an offense. And they said, for me, playing with a guy named, you know, Coach Coryell, wide open type of an offense, going to Green Bay, you know, the frozen tundra and 3 yards and a cloud of dust and a very predictable type of an offense, that was the worst thing that happened in my career. But looking back, I wouldn't trade it for anything.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen the Ice Bowl film before. I think you're standing there next to Vince Lombardi during the Ice Bowl. I mean, talk a little bit of what it was like to be with that Packer team and Coach Lombardi.
It was fun. You know, just you can't describe it. In fact, I was the first one to jump on Vince and congratulate him when Bart snuck it over. But it's funny that whole week, I was there with Zeke Bukowski. You know, we were the other two quarterbacks, and three out of, I mean, back then we called our own plays, and we were so regimented on our play calling Coach Lombardi was. I'd say we could be standing on the sidelines, and Zeke and I, three out of five times, we could call the same play that Bart was going to call. That's how regimented we were. And we knew what he was going to call that play. I mean, all week, Coach Lombardi said, if you need 1 yard or less, you know, we do the double team over Jethro Pugh. You don't go through Bob Lilly. He gets too low. You can't move him back. But Jethro had those long legs, and he thought we could push him back for at least a yard anytime we needed it. So, you know, we knew it was going to be a 31 wedge. But, you know, the key factor in the surprise was Bart kept himself and took it over as a quarterback sneak rather than give it to Chuck Machine, the fullback who was designed to carry the ball. So, but yeah, you know, playing for Coach Lombardi was, it's just hard to describe. You know, back in those days, he would motivate you totally opposite what every motivational speaker in that era would recommend. What I mean by that is he would take you in private and build you up, compliment you, you know, tell you things that would just make you beam from ear to ear. And then 10 minutes later, he'd take you out in front of the whole team, you know, 200 or 300 people, spectators that are watching practice, and just totally undress you, you know, and you wait a minute, I'm the same guy you just told me, you know, but he would address you in front of all your peers. He did it to everybody. I mean, he just treated everybody that way. Go ahead.
Yep. Sorry about that. I've got allergies too. Almost. And I was trying to stop it. It's still even. But hey, talk a little bit about 1968. I know you were in the Army. You weren't active until the last game when you came in and played for an injured Zeke Brightkowski. Want to talk a little bit about that game?
Yeah. In fact, that's one of my favorite. I mean, it's funny. I was in the reserves back in the Army, and I was supposed to go to my basic and AIT training in the off season, and one thing led to another. And so the week before the first game, the preseason game, I think it was an all-star game, you know, I have to report to active duty. So, and I spend pretty much four and a half, five months, Fort Sill, Fort Campbell. And, I get out, right around the first part of December, I think. I get out of the Army and I go up and practice with the team for a couple of weeks. And, you know, and I'm like, there's another quarterback up there named Billy Stevens. At that time it was Texas El Paso. He's a great guy. He could throw the heck out of the ball. Just throw bazookas. And, so I got up there in practice and then right before that game against the Bears at Wrigley Field, Saturday night, in Milwaukee, I have a reserve meeting. And, so the team goes down Saturday. I go to reserve meeting Saturday night in Milwaukee, get out about 11:30 from the reserve meeting in Milwaukee. I drive to Chicago, check in the Drake Hotel about 2:30 in the morning, get up the next morning, and I meet Coach Lombardi. He's the GM then, but he's still coaching. I mean, all practical purpose. He was general manager, but he was still, you know, calling all the shots. So I run into Coach Lombardi in the hallway going to breakfast, and he always called me Donald. He said, Donald, what time did you get in last night, son? And I said, you know, I told him 2 o'clock, not 2:30, but, and he said something like, he made some kind of a remark, well, did you bring a uniform? And I said, no, sir. And he said, well, I'm thinking about suiting you up today, whatever. And I thought he was joking. So we go to a meeting after breakfast, and he says he deactivates Bart. He's got broken ribs. He activates me. I'm the third string quarterback then. It's a great day for me. I can't believe it and stuff. Anyway, so we go out to Wrigley Field, and it's a big game for the Bears. If they win, they go to the playoffs. They have to win that game. End of the first quarter, they carry, you know, Zeke comes off the field. He's hurt. All of a sudden, Vince is upstairs, but he's calling all the shots. The coaches turn to me on the sidelines, and they go, Horn, get in there. And I could not believe that they sent me into that game, you know. I think the first series I lost 7 yards. The next series I just said, oh, hell, you know, I'm just let her go. And I remember I called two plays that game. One of them, I still remember the play, and I threw a touchdown. I think it was a 50-some-yard touchdown pass to Jim Grabowski. When I called the play, Boyd Dowler, Boyd said, Boyd say, he'd say, you know, we have that won't work. That's not going to work now. And I said, it's the only thing I can remember, you know. So I called a play, threw a 59-yard touchdown pass to Grabowski. Later on that game, I think I threw another pass, a touchdown pass to Boyd or somebody. And, again, he told me, he thought I called the wrong play in the wrong formation or something. But anyway, yeah, it was kind of a hodgepodge. We ended up winning that game, and I never will forget because Coach Lombardi went up to me three times after that game and hugged me.
Now, you go to 1969, you did something I think no Packer quarterback had done until that point, threw for 400 yards in a game against the St. Louis Cardinals. You want to tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, that was we had a great game plan. That was one of those days where everything just seemed, we're clicking on all cylinders. And I believe that. In fact, I just talked to Willie Davis the other day, too. That was Willie Davis Day. I remember Willie Davis Day. Willie told me, he says, Horn, you stole my thunder. but yeah, that was a great game. I threw for 400 and some odd yards. And I tell people they took me out starting in the fourth quarter. I didn't even finish the game. They put Billy Stevens in because he hadn't played all year pretty much and then let him play a little bit. But yeah, I threw five touchdowns. I was the first. I didn't realize just after the fact you got all these, these crazy records that don't mean anything. But I was the first quarterback in Packer history to ever throw 400 yards, I think, in Lambeau Field, and then first quarterback to throw for five touchdowns in Lambeau Field. And up until a few years ago, I had the longest touchdown pass ever thrown by any quarterback ever in Lambeau, and Brett Favre beat it. I met Brett and talked to him a few months prior to that, and actually it was 2 or 3 months before that, and then he beat it by 1 yard. I was going to call him and give him a bunch of static about it, but that's when all the stuff started about him retiring, not retiring. They forced him out, that type thing. So yeah.
And I mean, you could have told Brett, he could have left you one record. I mean, come on, he hauled them.
Well, he promised me here, but now it's like I'm talking to him. He says, "Horn, I've been trying for 16 years, or whatever." And I said, "Heck," I said, "Brett, yeah, you have more gray hair than I do, But when he left, he says, "Don," he said, "I promise." He says, "Your record's safe. I won't break it." Then sure and heck, he did. He threw a 20. He threw a 25-yard pass to Driver, and he took it a total of 90 yards. My record was only 89 yards. Hard to believe, but no one had thrown one longer than that for all those years in Lambeau.
Yeah, it is hard to believe. That's almost 100 years.
Yeah.
And you held the record for what, over 40?
Around 40, yeah, something like that, whatever. Yeah, I tell you. You never know. Back in those days, Mike, we called our own plays, and if we threw the ball 20, 22, 23 times a game, maybe 25, that was a lot of passes back then. I mean, these guys throw that in the first 15 or 20
minutes.
Well,
plus the rules for the defense were a lot different back then than they are now.
Yeah, well, it's just a totally different game. The athletes are so much bigger and stronger. It's just so much quicker. I mean, and I tell people today, I said, some of these kids make more money in one game. Some of them make one half of one game than I made in 9 years total.
Yeah.
It's just amazing. Just amazing. But,
All right. Now, 1971, Dan Devine took over for the Packers, I believe, and ended up letting you or trading you to Denver. What were your thoughts on that, leaving Green Bay and going to Denver?
Well, it's kind of a long story. How it kind of crescendoed up is that back in that era in the late 60s, free agency was totally different. And I had a 3-year deal with Green Bay. And then when Vince left in 69, it was my last year, my third year, my 3-year deal with them. And I had a pretty good year in 69. I set some records, and I think I started 4 or 5 games and won 4 of them or something like that or whatever. And I was pretty cocky. And I went to the coaches and said, most of the players and some of the coaches think I should have a better shot. I should be playing a little bit more. And Phil Bankson was there. He said, "Don, as long as Bart's here, he's the legend. He's the franchise. And as long as he's here, he's going to be my quarterback." And I totally understood that. So I went and talked to Bart. I said, "Bart, just between you and me, how many more years do you think you might play?" And he said, "Oh, 3 to 5 more." I'm going, "Oh, my gosh," so. But I had caught wind through a third party, Coach Lombardi contacted a third party and told me that he wanted me, if I would play my option, I'd go down and back up Sonny in D.C. and then, you know, hopefully be his quarterback after Sonny, you know, retired.
Yeah.
So I kind of committed to do that mentally and didn't really negotiate in good faith with Green Bay that year and 69. And, you know, Vince, all of a sudden Vince has his first, you know, put the first winning year, the Redskins that he had in years. So 1970 comes around, I'm playing my option out. And, you know, we don't really, you know, and so I didn't really want to leave Green Bay, but, you know, for my career, I thought I had to because whatever. Anyway, you know, Vince passes away September of 70. So my deal down there falls through end of the season. I actually played a little bit and hurt my knee in 70 again. You know, so I don't finish the season. I got a bad knee. Divine comes in. Divine called me, and he says, Don, after the season, it was in January, I believe, and he says, Don, he says, you know, it's Coach Divine, da-da-da, and he says, I understand you're not happy here. And I said, no, sir. I said, I'd rather, you know, have no qualms at all. I'd love to stay in Green Bay, et cetera, and that type of thing. And Divine says, okay. He says, I'm glad to hear that. He says, I like that straightforward talk or whatever. He says, I got this draft in a couple of weeks to take care of, and then after the draft, I'm going to fly you back here and get this thing settled and get the contract, just, you know, sign it, whatever. I said, perfect. I look forward to it. And then all of a sudden, the night before the draft, it was a little earlier back then in the season, I get a call from Lou Saban in Denver. Night before the draft, he says, Don, this is Coach Saban, the Denver Broncos. He said, I never made this phone call, but I just want to let you know I just traded for you, and you're now a Denver Bronco. And I was just blown away. So, you know, talked to him a little bit and then hung up the phone. I'm just kind of shocked. And then 6:30 the next morning, I'm in California, the phone rings, and this gal says, Don, this is so-and-so. Please hold for Coach Divine. So Coach Divine came on the line and says, he says, Don, this is Coach Dan Divine. Just calling you to let you know I just traded you to the Denver Broncos. Good luck. And he hung up. That's how I left. Anyway, but I, you know, instead of me going to Washington, I came to Denver, started out here, hurt my shoulder, hurt my knee again. And after that, I was pretty much just a backup quarterback after that. And I tell people the majority of my career, I backed at future Hall of Fame quarterbacks, Bart Starr and Dan Fouts. It's called being in the wrong place at the wrong time.
All right. Now, this is the interesting story to me. This is because you're the first guy I've had on that played in this league, the WFL, 1975. You played in Portland, which
right.
I think I saw, I think it was the Marty Schottenheimer 30 for 30 or whatever it is they do on the NFL Network. And he
right.
talked about coaching there and how nobody got paid the last half of the season. You want to talk about your experience in the WFL?
Yeah, I mean, it was great. We didn't get paid, we didn't get paid very, very much. And then, in fact, I believe the last paycheck that we got, I mean, the general manager walked in, gave us our paychecks, and it was like Indianapolis time trials. Everybody just – some guys didn't even change their uniform. They went down to the bank and hammered the checks through real quick with their uniforms on and their shoes just to get make sure the last check cleared before they closed everything. But now I went to Portland. It started off pretty strong or whatever, but it's tough to go up against the NFL. They have a lot of influence in so many different ways. And, you know, we couldn't get a good TV contract, I guess, and they couldn't get the proper coverage and backing, you know, on a national basis. It was tough to buck them. But I went up there, and I was what I enjoyed about it is it was just a great experience. And I tell people we did everything but sell beer and popcorn at halftime in the concessions up there. And we did our own taping. We had to clean the locker rooms up after we left. It was kind of a throwback, you know, I guess to the 20s or 30s or even 40s, how it used to be, whatever. But for the last 2 weeks of the season, I tell people I was starting quarterback, offensive coordinator, and head coach. it was something. But you know, we had a good time. I mean, you know, it was fun. I still stay in touch with a lot of those guys. A lot of them are good, you know, former NFL guys too, that that tried to extend their careers and that type of thing at that league. But yeah, it was it was fun. I remember one game I always wanted to do this. I called the whole game from the line of scrimmage. And always wanted to do that. And, you know, of course, with being the offensive coordinator and head coach, I allowed myself to do that.
Well, about the only way you could do it then, wasn't it, Don?
Yeah, it was. Yeah, it was fun. It was good times. Good time. Good memories.
All right. So do you still watch the NFL today?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You know,
so
I mean,
what's your take
watch.
On quarterback play now compared to when you played?
Oh gosh, I would love to play. I mean, I would love to. It's such a sophisticated game. I would love to play today with the rule changes. You know, the shotgun and the pistol, and so much of a faster game. And you know, throwing. You know, to me, if I could throw the ball 35, 45, 50 times a game, man, I'd be in just heaven. I would be in heaven, especially just sitting back there. You know, sitting back there 4 or 5 yards deep or whatever in the shotgun or pistol and just, you know, just let her flip, you know, just let her rip. To me, it's just much more of a faster, quicker game today. You know, more of an exciting game for the fans, I think, today than it was back then, back in the old days, so to speak.
Now, what quarterbacks do you think are playing today that could have fit in that era when it was probably a little bit tougher because of the rules?
You mean back in the 60s and 70s?
Yeah, compared to the quarterbacks now, do you think a Tom Brady would have worked in 1970?
Yeah, I think Brady would for sure. You know, Peyton, those two definitely would. For sure, a guy like Russell Wilson, I don't think he would fit in back in the old days and that type of thing. Anybody that's not a pure drop back in the pocket type of a cerebral type of a quarterback.
Yeah, because back then, the only one they had that was like that was Fran Tarkenton.
Yeah, yeah, Fran was all over the place. I remember he'd just drive Coach Van Brocklin, you know, the Dutchman. He'd drive him crazy. He'd just drive him crazy because he would just run all over the place. And I remember, talking to some of our defensive guys, Willie Davis and Lionel Aldridge, they get worn out just trying to chase him down sometimes.
So what is your take? You already talked about how much players make today compared to what they made back then. What's your take on the way the NFL takes care of or doesn't take care of retired players now?
Well, they're moving in the right direction, but they should do a lot more. I mean, and hopefully they're going to fess up to it and take care of a lot of former players. You know, I have teammates of mine that that have applied for some assistance because they have CTE. They have, they'll sit there and say, Don, I'm gonna meet you tonight after work over here. And I said, okay. And then next morning they'll call and say, was I supposed to meet you last night? I started driving, but forgot I had to, and I didn't know what to do. So I ended up going home, and that type of thing. And these guys are, they have some, they do have some, some problems. And they applied to the league, they applied to the league for assistance and they constantly turned down because they say they don't qualify and that type of thing. But, back in the old days, they didn't care what happened to you 5, 10, 15, 20 years later after your career. They just get you ready for Sunday. They didn't care. I mean, in the old days, they would, you come to the sidelines, a lot of guys, and, get a little ding and something like that. Instead of asking some other question like, who we playing today or something, they always say, what's your name? And they hold one or two fingers up right in front of your face saying, how many fingers am I holding up? Instead of going, putting three fingers on one hand and two on the other and say, how many fingers, whatever. And then they give you two red salt pills or two gray salt pills or a combination of red and gray salt pills, they would say. And then they say, take these and get back in the game, a little smelling salt and whatever. And they didn't care. They just get you back in the game.
Yeah, and unfortunately, so. I would think that if, the stuff didn't come to light, they probably would still be doing the same thing.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, and it's just a shame. But, these guys, they're – Mike, they're so big and they're so strong and they're so fast. It's just unbelievable. Yeah.
Yeah,
I remember,
like being in a car collision 60 times a game if you're an offensive or defensive lineman.
Exactly. Exactly. Exactly.
So before we get off here, you want to tell us a little bit about what you're doing today?
Yeah, I got involved about 4 or 5 years ago with a company called Premier Stem Cell Institute. They're based here in Colorado, and anyway, I'm for lack of a better definition, I'm what they call the NFL liaison. I'm kind of a spokesperson for them, and what they do is they take your own stem cells, you take your own adult stem cells, and they take them out of your body and then put them back into your damaged areas of your body. They can do neurological aspects of it too for those type of diseases. And it helped me tremendously because a few years ago I could hardly walk. My knees were so bad. And so they felt my knees and my hip and my shoulder and stuff. Anyway, make a long story short, I've gotten probably 150 former NFL players and even current players to take advantage of this. And we have guys that are on our advisory board. Lance Allworth, he's on it. Mike Golick, who's in your business. He's on our board. Some former Broncos, Leroy Jordan, who I just talked to yesterday. My nemesis with the Dallas Cowboys down in Dallas. We have an office down in Dallas. They have a grand opening there tonight, in fact. But, I've been doing that, and it's been a tremendous help for people. And it's a great alternative to invasive surgeries or replacements. You virtually walk in and walk out. It's almost painless. If you go to a dentist, that hurts more than this type of a thing. And the results are pretty promising. 70-80% of the players are 70-80% better within a few months. Lance Allworth was all set 2 or 3 years ago to have a knee replacement. I called him. He came out here and had one injection into his knee. 6 weeks later, he called me up and says, "Don, I can't thank you enough. I canceled my knee replacement. My knee feels like 80-85% better. I can walk now. I can play golf again. No pain, that type of thing." So it's just been a tremendous alternative to invasive surgeries and major joint replacements and that type of thing. So I've been doing that and it's been fun. We've gotten involved with Mike Ditka and the Gridiron Greats. We're a big sponsor with them, and we're doing some pro bono stuff with them down in at the new facility on Jacksonville, Florida. We're involved in there where we're helping former NFL players and also military veterans, providing services along with other medical, people and facilities. We're all combined in one big facility down there. So it's been exciting. It's really kind of a state of the art type thing. More, and it's your own stem cells. It's not embryonic stem cells. It's all FDA compliant. Nothing illegal about it or whatever. It's just a great. Great positive results from this stuff. It's just amazing. And, we treated one guy, one former player is 92 years old. And then some guys, we actually treated, can't tell you who they are, but three of the Broncos on defense that started in the Super Bowl have had this done from our facility. So.
Well, you can tell me, Don. I won't tell anybody.
I wish I could, but I can't.
Really, I'll keep it a secret. I won't tell anybody. Now, if anybody wants any more information on it, where did it go again?
I'm going to give you the abbreviated version of the website. It's www.premsci.com. And that's a short version of PremierStemCellInstitute.com.
Well, Don, it was an honor having you on the show today.
Mike, thank you. Anytime. Enjoyed talking to you. In fact, you brought up some subject matter I haven't thought about in years. So.
Well, that's what I'm here for. See, that's what gets you when all you do is study old football stuff. When you're in school, supposed to be doing math, this is what happens to you. So.
Yeah. In fact, Freddie, I helped recruit Freddie down to San Diego State after I left. He and I are pretty good friends.
Yeah. Oh, he had a great first story about him, his first encounter with Don Coryell. So
yeah,
it was funny as heck. But and I'll tell you, I mean, anybody, as soon as when I did some research, saw you played at San Diego State, guys like Don Coryell, Bum Phillips, Vince Lombardi, Yeah. I like to have the guys on just to ask questions about those guys, because just to hear the way their former players talk about them will tell you all you need to know about those guys.
Yeah, yeah. I tell people, you know, anything you hear about, Vince Lombardi, et cetera, you probably magnify it, you know, 5 or 10-fold. It's all pretty true.
Yeah, because we had Jerry Kramer on like a year ago. He said nothing but great things about him also.
Yeah, I just talked to him. In fact, yeah, Jerry's going to come out and see our facility too. He's actually a guy that got me involved in the stem cell stuff, Doug.
Yeah,
Jerry Kramer talked to me. You know, that's when I first heard about the stem cell, was from Jerry. Yeah, I just talked to him about 3 weeks ago. So, yep.
Yeah, should be in the Hall of Fame too, by the way.
Oh, gosh, yeah. Are you kidding? I mean, yeah. I mean, there's so many guys. I mean, that was, you know, I mean, I feel very fortunate to catch the great era of the late '60s of the Green Bay team. I mean, there are so many great guys. I mean, they're not only great football players; they're great human beings.
Yeah, and Jerry's definitely one of those. And I'll tell you another one. Do you know Eddie Metter?
Oh yeah, I know Eddie. In fact, I'll see Eddie. I'm going to see Eddie out in.
Yeah, they're honoring him at the Gridiron Greats thing.
I'll see him out there. I'll see him out there early part of June. You bet.
Yeah, because I had him on the show like a month ago. That's another guy everybody always talks highly of, George Allen. But Eddie is a great guy, too. And when you look at Eddie, I mean, he still holds like 6 present-day Rams records. You know, he was the cornerback on the all-decade team, and nobody even ever puts him on a semifinal ballot for a Hall of Fame.
I know it. Yeah. Yeah, I remember. Yeah, I grew up out there in L.A. I remember watching him play. I'm a big fan of Eddie Metters. You bet.
All right, Don. Well, we'd love to have you back anytime you want to come on, and if you want to hook us up with the Haven Moses and the Lance Allworth, Willie Davis, we're all good with that too.
Sounds
good. So you may
good.
Get
I'll
a call from
dad.
Me in the future. So.
Okay. All right.
All right. Thanks a lot, Don.
You're welcome, Mike. Thank you. Have a good one.
All right. You too. All right, guys, that was former Green Bay Packer Don Horn. Make sure you check out all of our interviews the rest of this week. We'll have former Dallas Cowboy Timmy Newsom tomorrow, former Kentucky coach, now he's coach at Belhaven, Hal Mummy. Thursday night we'll have our Inside Boxing Weekly show. We're going to have a couple surprise guests there. Friday we will have former defensive end James Jeffcoat from the Dallas Cowboys, one of the best defensive ends of the 1980s. And then we'll have Jeff Severson from the Super Bowl VII Washington Redskins. You can check us out on Google Music, Stitcher, Spreaker, iTunes, just about everywhere you can find podcasts. Make sure you check out all the articles for us on www.thegruelingtruth.net. Make sure you check that out also. And, of course, as always, go follow the Gridiron Mo app. I mean, it's the best app you'll find football-wise. You can call the plays during a live NFL game. And when in the off season, they have Super Bowl trivia, which tomorrow night again, myself, Matt Andrew Scavage, will be back with 2 more guests and Gridiron Mo founder Aris Persides to actually play Super Bowl trivia again. We do that every Wednesday night. You can find all the old episodes on the GruelingTruth.net website. So, for Don Horn, I'm Mike Goodpaster. You've been listening to The Grueling Truth, where the legends speak.
Look in your home. Look in your office. Look in your home office. Everywhere you turn, there's so much smart. At Capella University, we think education should be smart, too. Our game-changing FlexPath format puts you in control of your master's degree, so you can learn how, when, and where you want. Smart, huh? Yeah, we think so, too. So if you want to take the next step in your career, make Capella your first step. Visit capella.edu to learn more. Capella University. Don't just learn, learn smarter.